GM everyone, welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything Frax, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, well, you come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave, here by myself, and this is how you harness the power of the Flywheel. And it's just me this time. Thank you for joining me. This episode, we have on Baseline Markets, who have created a really exciting DeFi primitive from first principles. And I want to frame this in asking the questions. If we were to redo tokenomics from the ground up and how, you know, we come out with tokenomics, we build tokenomics in the beginning, how we market make after the token is released, what would it look like? How could we create a fairer, more open, more transparent system that gives market participants the proper information to make decisions in a more equitable manner? And from this question, this is where Baseline came about. It's a brand new DeFi primitive. We're going to get into it in the show. I don't want to give anything else away. I just want you as the viewer to have that question in mind as we get into the show. But before we get in, make sure you go ahead, you give us a follow and a like wherever you are. Give it on whether you're on Twitter, on YouTube. And if you're on YouTube, subscribe, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. If you're on Twitter, give us a like, retweet, give us a reply. Make sure you follow us on all our socials on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. If you're listening to this on audio, make sure you follow us on Spotify, Apple. Give us 5 stars, please. That goes a long way. Go ahead and subscribe to our website, flywheeldefi.com. For all the latest Frax and DeFi insights and alpha. You'll thank yourself later. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDave22. You can follow me on Farcaster at DeFiDave. You can also follow Flywheel on Farcaster at Flywheel. And let's get the Flywheel spinning. Do you hold ETH but don't know what to do with it? Want to earn those juicy liquid staking derivative yields but don't know where to start? Well, Frax ETH is there for you. Frax ETH is Frax's native LSD solution, allowing you to earn boosted yields in multiple ways on your ETH. If you want to get started, go to app.frax.finance and turn your ETH into Frax ETH today. GM everyone, welcome to Flywheel. I'm your host, DeFi Dave. Here, this time around, we have a very special episode. We have on Indigo again, who's been on the show before, and we have on Fully Allocated. They're devs on a project that I've been seeing a lot of on the timeline recently called Baseline Markets, which is an exciting new DeFi primitive, and we're going to get right into it. So Indigo, Fully, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
And one of the things I couldn't help but notice is kind of the lore and a little bit of controversy surrounding Baseline. It was like, oh, it's by the Olympus devs, this and that. And there's a lot of history behind it. And, you know, I couldn't help, once I looked into Baseline, I could not help to be really impressed what you guys cooked up. I think it's incredibly innovative. Like, it's, you know, we've been seeing like pieces of novel DeFi primitives coming about, but I think you've taken a lot of different things that happened into the past, put them together well, whether it was Olympus, whether it was White Lotus, whether, you know, even Rye. And you created something with Baseline Markets. And yes, it's kind of like your first test case on it. So we'll get right into it. So what is a bit of like the context and lore behind Baseline? I'll let you guys take it away.
Yeah, so the project started like in the trough of the bear market mid-2023 when there was pretty much nothing going on. But in the dark, there was this one small project that came out by somebody named Adam or Surf Code Repeat. And it was an exploration in like treasury-backed systems built into a liquidity pool. So in the project was called White Lotus. And was White Lotus was really interesting. It kind of captured a lot of ideas that from Olympus. It captured a lot of things. It was one of the first things that I know of that was built into like a liquidity pool. And it was also using protocol owned liquidity. So like for us, Fully and I have both been deep in Olympus for a very long time. So it was like really interesting for us. So we started looking into it. We all bought in and Unfortunately, White Lotus actually broke. There's a few problems with it, with the staking. There's a problem with the rebalancing logic. So we actually took it and we thought, hey, like, we actually have a lot of ideas of our own. So we could actually, we decided to fork it and see like what we could do ourselves. And we added our own little flavor. And that's how Jimbo was born. Foley, do you want to add on?
No, I think you covered it.
Yeah. And something we talked about before the show was a key difference between White Lotus and Olympus is with Olympus, the protocol owned liquidity and the treasuries were separate. But with White Lotus, it was all of it was one thing. And the treasury was actually in these different bins or ranges within the Trader Joe pool. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually think that that's probably the primary like innovation of Lotus is that like, you know, because we've seen floor backed tokens before. We've even seen them in liquidity pools. Prior to Lotus, we were like looking at this project called JPEGers, and they had also a rising floor that they got through like ARBs in their different liquidity pools. But one of the coolest things about Lotus was there's two things. One was it was concentrated liquidity, and two, that the like liquidity rebalances were done directly inside the pool through a smart contract. And to me, even though the mechanic of, you know, a floor price or something was the same, the actual like distribution of that mechanic inside these like trading pools where we're just buying, selling things, there's no extra app that we have to use. I thought that that was very, very innovative. Yeah, and props to serve code repeat for like thinking of that.
Cool. Yeah. So White Lotus, they do something new, cool, utilizing things that didn't really exist when Olympus came out, or at least not widely used. And then Jimbo came out. What made Jimbo different than White Lotus, and what exactly happened to Jimbo?
Yeah. Okay. So, I can touch on this briefly. The main differences between Jimbo and Lotus were in how we like rebalanced liquidity. So White Lotus was a pretty naive implementation of liquidity rebalancing. It was the first of its kind. So I think, you know, he was trying something different, but we ended up dynamically rebalancing the like token liquidity or the ask side liquidity of the book. And we would like recycle excess liquidity in the bins that didn't need to be there. And we tried to like dynamically price and move our liquidity around. White Lotus, just as you bought through the bins, the floor would move, but no intermediary liquidity would change. So you ended up with these like really big gaps in the market and the price would kind of whipsaw back and forth. And then eventually the gap got so big that, it became hard for the asset to perform well in the market as like, you know, from like a slippage perspective. And so we like realized this, we had the, you know, advantage of hindsight. And so we were able to fix a lot of these problems that we saw and launch. And Jimbo actually, it launched twice. In a bit of a hurry, to be honest. We were thinking like, it wasn't something that we had thought as like, okay, this is going to be our long-term project. We're going to, you know, continue down this path. We just wanted to see what would happen to the mechanisms and the pool if we fixed some of these like problems. But we ended up realizing that, you know, like to us at least, this is kind of like where the future of DeFi is going. And we start to like take a deeper look. Yeah.
So you start testing in prod. I test in prod for back in the day, and then when you were testing prod, you're like, wait a second, there's something bigger here than we thought.
Yeah, well, we kind of realized that before we even launched. As we were building it and as we were kind of like polishing it, we were like, wow, this is actually, you know, a pretty big idea, and that there's something here. The thing is, we were so excited to try it out. I think we built the whole Jimbo, the first version, in like 4 or 5 days. When we launched, we ended up having an issue with the way, I think the rebalances ended up getting frozen or locked. Ooh. Because there were some gaps in the liquidity pool that came from external LPs when we launched. And So the main thing is liquidity bins in Trader Joe are very different from Uniswap pools, in that in Uniswap pools, your like range is variable, but your liquidity depth is discrete. It's like set. So like, you know, you only pick where you start and end your liquidity, and then Uniswap automatically puts liquidity for you in between. In Trader Joe, you actually have each bin and the amount of liquidity you want to put in each bin. And the system will like iterate through the bins that you want to put liquidity, each different price. And so,
wait, so you have different like depth of liquidity in each bin? Oh, yes. I can see where problems can arise from that. Yeah. It's kind of like too much. I can see where the gaps are.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's like having one like shallow bin or one like shallow pool that's like maybe like a kiddie pool, like 3 feet. And then for some reason you have like some scuba diver pool that's like 20, 30 feet down. You know what I mean? And I can see where like things get messed up. Okay.
Yeah. There are actually like very core differences in like how the implementations result in like liquidity profiles on the pools, but like we don't have to we won't get too much into that. Probably another conversation. But the main difference is just that like with Uniswap, you don't get to choose what your like shape looks like, just your range. But the benefit of the upside is that you get infinite range. You can choose any arbitrary range. And then with Trader Joe, you can choose any arbitrary like liquidity depth. But because it's going bin by bin and adding liquidity, you actually have like an upper limit because of gas on the amount of bins that you can change per transaction. This is actually a really key detail because in these types of systems, Jimbo or Lotus or whatever, the protocol is actually like constantly adjusting liquidity, and it's not doing it atomically. So it doesn't happen after every swap. So because of this, you need the liquidity rebalancing to be done in one transaction. You can't have like more than, I don't know, I think 100 or 200 bins in Trader Joe at a time. So the strategies that you have for how you rebalance liquidity is different. You can't rebalance liquidity in like multiple transactions, because then there's opportunities for front running, and people can see, you know, what will happen after the first rebalance.
It sounds like Trader Joe is a bit more complicated than Uniswap V3, and you have like a lot more things to think of and to keep in mind.
It's just trade-offs. There's a lot of nice things about Trader Joe, actually, like really, really nice things. But
the pricing and the specification of your liquidity is extremely powerful. In Uniswap, when we first built the system for that, we actually struggled a lot because the accounting is not super precise. There's actually a different way to do accounting. Store like a lot of their prices in the pool in like square root prices. So you have a lot of like precision errors when you're going back and forth between the like prices in the pool and the prices in your accounting system. There's just trade-offs. Okay.
There's just one interesting detail though. You guys talked about like the gas limitation, and like such that we can't add all of the bins, right? Like we can't put full range liquidity very easily in one transaction. So there's actually a limitation in Jimbo such that like we could only put like, you know, max, I forget how many it was like a few hundred. How much was it for?
We did 50. I think on the UI, it allows you to do 100 conservatively. And I think if you really push the gas limit of Arbitrum, you get like maybe 150, 200.
Right. The thing was though, like we had all of our sell side liquidity up to that point. And for V2, although the system was like re-architected and like rebuilt from scratch, that limitation is actually what opened us up to the hack.
Okay. Yeah. So there was a
interestingly
hack.
Enough. Yeah.
There's a hack. Yeah. So for context, so we launched V1. There was an issue with how Trader Joe facilitates liquidity, provisioning, and our rebalances ended up getting frozen. We launched a V2. We fixed it. It was more dynamic. And as a result, it ended up getting hacked. And it was a large hack amount. I believe it was over 4,000 ETH and the largest hack in Arbitrum to date. So it was a pretty big one.
Okay, so the hack happened.
Yes.
You guys are probably like, oh, fuck, now what? How did you guys go from hack to building baseline? Were you thinking of like, all right, are we going to build our ways out of this? Like, all right, like, what should we do next? Like, you know, how did that?
There's a lot of mental anguish.
I can imagine.
Doubt.
Like we got hacked, and you know, I remember we were just sitting in a room thinking like, what do we do now? Obviously, like, you know, the first thought is immediately like, how do we make people whole? The problem is making people whole is like a whole 4,000 ETH deep. And, you know, for us.
And what time is this? When
this is May of last year, end of May of 2023. So like right as June's about to come around.
Okay. So it's like deep bear, like, you know, ETH bear.
Yes.
Like around like 16, 18.
ETH was 16. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we were trying to pick back, we were looking at, you know, like a seven, maybe $8 million dollar exploit. And now, it's close to 16. So, yeah. Crazy.
And so, okay. So you guys are thinking like, okay, now what? When is this when you guys started thinking of baseline, where you're thinking of like, oh, like, oh, how are we going to pay people back? Like, what's going on here?
It was kind of a journey. Go ahead.
I mean, it was like right after we were like, okay, like how the fuck do we make all this money back? And actually fully had like such high conviction. Actually, it was really cool. So he says like,
he's fully allocated. That's why.
Exactly. He's fully allocated. So he said he had this realization that like, actually the market structure that we created is actually like, probably if we can like do some modifications, we can actually create like a better, more equitable market structure that has like never actually been seen. So like, and it makes a lot of sense because if you think about, there's a lot of thinking that we had at Olympus that like, Olympus was like a very big system, but there was a lot of ideas like RBS, there's like the floor system. And it's like, why, we always thought like, what if we could take these systems and like add them for other tokenomic systems? And then, so when Fully came, he's like, yo, we should like, you know, productize this, we should make it into a launch pad, we can actually like change how like tokenomics are done currently. And it like really clicked, and that's just where we went. Fully, you want to go?
So one of the things I've realized, I've been doing token design for a very long time, and one of the things that I've realized over the years is that, you know, if you're building a project or a protocol, you have to be an expert in both like product and business building, but then also in token design. And those two are very, very different skill sets. And I see founders struggling a lot with like, they build a great product or a really cool protocol, and they have no idea how to integrate their token. And one of the main issues is that in crypto, people just really care about the token and its performance. And I think it causes a lot of headaches for founders that like really want to focus on their product. And this is not what they are experts in. And we end up getting a lot of like token design wrong. Either the emissions is too high, or, you know, the founders don't think about liquidity of the token enough. And so, I told Indigo, I was like, I think, you know, what we can do is abstract this entire problem away if we parameterize it correctly and we turn it into a system, you know, for other people to use. And so I saw that as a potential future. At the time. And I was thinking, you know, like, if we're right about this, you know, we have a chance to pay everyone back and build a truly by building a truly valuable system for everyone in the ecosystem, and solving a lot of the problems, you know, that exist today. So I think we kind of like arrived at that conclusion. We arrived at it together. Indigo like was like very much on board. And one of the reasons why I've loved working with him is his just his mindset is like, in my mindset are like very closely aligned. And so we were, you know, at that point and thinking, okay, well, we know that this is valuable. We don't want to just let it go yet. It's very unfortunate that we had this hack. Let's try to build something valuable enough to pay people back. And what we believe is that, you know, if this works, then it's valuable enough and we'll definitely be able to, you know, get everyone their money back for participating. And, if it doesn't work, I mean, we end up at the same place that we are now. So like, there's
might as well try.
What else?
Okay.
Yeah. And just putting myself in the shoes of someone who's an exploit victim, like at the very least, I would like the team to keep trying, because what else can you really do? Yeah. So that's kind of where we started. And at the time, so how it ended up going on to Uniswap and how it became Baseline is that like, we were thinking, well, at the time Base was coming around, there was like on-chain summer. And so we're thinking maybe we can launch on Base. But Base doesn't have Trader Joe. And so, you know, we were like, well, we could just rebuild it for Uniswap. It's like kind of the same thing, right? And so like we started building on Uniswap and we realized that everything broke because
everything broke.
The way that they manage their liquidity is completely different. Like none of the, like down to the way that they calculate, you know, like how you calculate the amount of tokens that are in your position is completely different because like Uniswap uses curves. So it's all a continuous thing. And then Trader Joe uses discrete bins. So you can actually price like per bin, like how many tokens and assets are going to be going in and out of that bin. And so we ended up rebuilding the entire system from scratch. There are also certain things that like don't work in Uniswap. For example, in Trader Joe, we had in Jimbo, we had taxes on the trades. Like a lot of meme coins will like tax 5% of each buy and sell. I think we did less. I think we did a total of 5% on both the buys and the sells, but it doesn't matter. In Uniswap, you can't do taxes in V3.
Trade-offs.
Because of the way the pool accounting works. And so like all the mechanics that we had that we wanted to port over broke. And we just... Every time we hit an issue, we thought it was the only issue. And so we designed
a solution. That must have been so aggravating. Like we're rebuilding this from scratch. It's like, ah, fuck. Every like thing down to the calculations, you have to redo again.
All the math is different. It's completely different. The system is completely different. But yeah.
Yeah, we rewrote this thing like multiple times, even like not just from Trader Joe to Uniswap, but like Uniswap, there was like at least like three different iterations of like what we made. Yeah. So it just took a lot of time of like figuring out how the fuck do we make this thing work.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you'll see there's a big gap in like the time, the development time. Yeah. And we were like, at some points, you know, in the community, some people were like, oh, the team probably just rugged. Everyone's gone. There was a period of silence. Like, it's just because we were trying so hard to like build on Uniswap and figure out how to make it work. That was very frustrating because we were like, you know, we had to rebuild everything again and again and again as like we realized the differences in these AMMs.
You went from building Jimbo in 5 days to like it's taking you months to rebuild would eventually become Baseline.
Yes.
Irony, like it's you know, kind of funny in that regard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay. Did you end up building it for Uniswap V3?
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did. You had your Eureka moment. Sir. Okay.
Yeah, actually, we built it for Uniswap. There's just a lot of like mechanics changes. Actually, I'd love to highlight like a few things that we had to change. Yeah. So like in Trader Joe, we had the taxes, which was like a very direct way of like gaining value for the floor. Here, like in Uniswap, the router does not support taxes. So I remember like talking with Fully, like, okay, like what the fuck do we do? Do we make our own router or something like that? But then he actually came up with a system of like accruing fees through through just the rebalancing of the liquidity, which I think is like, I don't think anyone has ever done this. It's like really, really novel system of making fees. So the idea is that like the sell side liquidity is thicker than the buy side. So when a rebalance happens, we actually, when a bunch of buys happen and come into the pool, you buy at a certain price. But then if we rebalance after those buys, we actually cut the liquidity on the buy side. So such that if you were to sell that same amount, you're actually getting less out of that, right? So it's effectively you're paying like a premium. But where that premium goes is actually goes to the floor value. So it's just a rebalancing of where the value is. Okay. And so that floor value, which we call the BLV in baseline, that floor value is actually available to you at any time and fully liquid. So you can actually borrow that for like a fixed rate and fixed interest loan. And you can actually choose your days. So like, I think you can loan up to like 25 years if you really wanted to. So yeah, the system is like very flexible in that way.
Okay. Yeah. So instead of there being a tax, you guys basically rebalance the liquidity. So if they were to sell, it's effectively like a tax.
It's okay. So to simplify, like to the most simple model is like, so how do you make money in trading, right? Is like you buy low and you sell high, or that's what they say. I'm still trying to figure that part out, but according to nomenclature, you make money in trading. And so if you invert this, right, you can say the same thing. You can sell high and buy low, and that's actually what the protocol is doing because it's the issuer of the tokens. So it issues tokens into a high like price range, which is the current market price, and when it sells those tokens, it accumulates ETH. When it rebalances, it takes some of the ETH from the higher price range liquidity and it moves it to the lower price range liquidity. So your system is actually capitalized the same way, but it's buying back more tokens as a result of buying back lower. So let's say I sold one token for $10. Now I have $10 and I have one token in circulation. If I move the liquidity, my $10, and I buy back all the tokens at $5, I can actually afford to buy back two tokens. And that's where the surplus comes from. So when we're moving liquidity from the higher to lower prices, the system is actually able to buy back more tokens. And the other key component of this system is that there's no initial supply. And so because you know what your like supply overhang looks like and you're buying back more tokens, we now have this like capacity of more than circulating supply that the system can buy back. And right now in baseline, that's sitting at like maybe 400K. Yes. It's almost, 2.5 million. And so, yeah, you're slowly building up these surpluses from skimming liquidity out of the higher price ranges and moving it into the floor, making it accessible through the borrows. And then by doing that, the floor price will slowly grind up. And the trick, so what Indigo is saying is like, everyone's like, how is this possible? Where are people losing money or like what is going on? So the thing to be very aware of is that like, if you were to buy 500 tokens, in baseline, and then we call a shift and you sell 500 tokens, the price that you end at will be slightly less than the price that you start at. Because the liquidity on the way down is slightly less than the liquidity on the way up.
Wait, hold on. Reading your docs, I know there's like shift is when the range decreases and slide is when the range increases.
Opposite.
My bad. So shift is increases, slide when is decrease. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Slide is decrease. But before we get into that, I want to, now that we're at like finally at baseline, I just want to ask like, all right, what is baseline? What is not baseline? What is yes and what isn't yes? And I'll let you, and like, what's the difference between the two?
Yeah. So baseline is the system. The baseline is the system of like programmatic, automatic market making through a smart contract, deploying liquidity pools or deploying liquidity into the Uniswap pool directly, or in our case, Thruster on Blast. Yes is the first token launched through the system with a very specific liquidity configuration. So Baseline is the technology and the like philosophy that we've been researching, you know, on-chain market making systems. And Yes is like our demonstration of that to the world that like, hey, you know, we were thinking at first like, okay, other people are going to want to use this. But it's very hard to convince someone to change their tokenomics completely, you know, say, hey, you're not going to have any tokens up front. Actually, it's all going to go into the pool and the contract's going to keep it. So you don't get to take any of the money for yourself. So we realized that there is a lot of these obstacles about introducing this idea because it's such a paradigm shift to people and they're not that interested in like reading research papers. So we realized the best way to kind of give attention to this idea is probably to launch a meme coin that like does well and just keeps going up. And you know, when people do that, they'll realize, see that they'll realize like, oh, there's something interesting happening here. They'll look more into it. It's kind of what happened. People heard about Yes and then they found Baseline and then they started looking more into the mechanics and then they realized, oh, wow, this is a really great generalized system. And yeah, we're excited because we haven't even come out with like the parameterizations yet, the launch pad where you can configure your own liquidity. There's going to be different risk profiles in the market. It'll all be backed by the same underlying system. But yeah, we're just now moving into that phase and people are starting to understand what this is. And so now we're able to say like, okay, you want to launch a token? This is how we do it. And this is how you can do it too.
So Baseline is this new tokenomics primitive that's solving the problems of, you know, how do we get the tokenomics right? Because so many times founders, you know, they're building a product, they're building a protocol, they're built, you know, maybe they're building a DAO, but they just don't know about tokenomics. It seems they're in the dark about it. And so what you're thinking is like, hey, let's come out with a primitive for founders to launch their tokens that, and that can like market make in a sustainable manner. And Yes is like the first use case of that.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And so with Yes, honestly, like when I was looking at Yes and I was doing my research about it, it's not really a meme. Like, yes, it started as a meme. Everything starts as a meme, but it's really like a stablecoin like liquidity token that could be the base token for every future token that launches on Baseline. Can you like go up about like how did like Yes come about and what are with Yes in particular? There's basically three different parts of it, three different ranges. You have the floor, you have the anchor, and you have discovery. Can you go into that? I'll let you guys take it away.
Sure, I'll cover this part a little bit. Baseline has three liquidity ranges. The floor is the lowest price at which the protocol can buy back the last circulating token from the pool. So if you were to dump everything in, it's the price that we calculate to be the lowest price we can still afford to, you know, take out the circulating supply. The anchor is the intermediary. So the floor is one tick spacing, the lowest possible, like the thinnest possible price range where we concentrate most of our liquidity. But then between the floor and the anchor or market, there's actually a gap. There's a premium. Right now it's about 24-25%. So there's liquidity in between the floor to the anchor. The market, that's the anchor liquidity. And then all the new tokens that are being sold, from the protocol that are not in circulating supply exist in the discovery range. And so people buy through that. You can, if you know like traditional exchanges, or like the nomenclature, the floor and the anchor are like the bids, in the book as the market. You can see Baseline as a market maker and it's putting in orders into this order book. The floor and the anchor are like permanent bid side orders. And then the discovery is like a permanent ask side order. And every time we call shift or we slide, we just like change the like places that we put liquidity based on the current market price.
Okay, got it. I like to think of discovery as the place where you quote unquote mint tokens.
Yes.
Basically, that's how I think like from the curve land, when I like look at discovery, it's like, oh, like you're basically like minting new tokens. So
yeah, a good way to look at this system is kind of like a bonding curve plus an AMM like liquidity pool with like protocol and liquidity. So it kind of is supposed to like not only facilitate like active trading, but it's also supposed to actually be the token issuance system itself. So like you can imagine that like we built the like a certain bonding curve into the concentrated liquidity pool, and that's what the system is.
One of them, I just want to jump in here. One of the key insights about this is that like usually people think about emissions and like price or liquidity as like separate things, you know? So like first they think, okay, what's our supply? How much do we emit? What's the lockup and time frame that we emit over? And then let's set up this pool too and like bootstrap liquidity and do all these things to kind of like get these in like on par with each other. And what we realize is actually we should just tie the emissions algorithmically to activity that's happening directly in the pool. So that as you're, you know, if you have some kind of like emissions, it's just based on the market performance of the token. And that way you don't have to worry about the
discovery. That's the discovery happening.
That's the discovery. Exactly.
Discovery is like the replacement for emissions because you have 100% of the tokens in the liquidity.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's sick. Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So it's like this. And so as long as yes is naturally growing, then the discovery will naturally get the
grow the, as well.
Grow yeah. As so, well. So
The philosophical concept behind that is just the design was like we wanted to create a similar depth of liquidity in the bid and the ask side. So there's some parity. If you look at like order books in, you know, Binance or something, generally they try to keep the bid and the ask side about the same. If there is an imbalance, usually the market will correct in one way or another. If there's way more bids than asks, it's more likely that the tokens going up. If there's more asks than bids, it's probably going to go down. Liquidity is kind of this like hidden hand that we don't really think we think more about it now in crypto, but before I got into crypto, I really only cared about price.
Right.
And so now it's something where we're realizing like actually we just want the protocol just wants to keep the two in par. If the liquidity on the bid side goes down, in other words, if people start selling the token into the anchors and the floor and there's less supply and there's less ETH for us to buy for the protocol to buy the token back, then it should also be minting less tokens. If there's a lot of buying pressure, a lot of leverage, and a lot of people that are bidding it, the protocol kind of like recognizes that there's a lot of inflows and it increases liquidity as a result.
Interesting. And you mentioned lending there. Because Baseline is not only a market making primitive, but it allows users to take out leverage on as well. And it's not price based, it's time based. And it's quite capital efficient because I believe it's 100% LTB, not LTV. Can you guys go into how lending works?
Yeah. So the whole system is designed around what we call the BLV, which is like a minimum price that the protocol can buy back the entire circulating supply. So normally, like we would just leave, if we wanted to make a floor token, you just leave it there. But like we had the insight that like we can actually just lend that value out, and so the way the lending works is that. As long as we know like the duration of how, when you take it and when you decide to pay back, we can account for that. Right. But if you decide to not pay back at the end of this duration, we essentially just do an accounting trick. Right. So our liabilities went down, but our assets actually went up. So we actually make a profit. Mm-hmm. And so we actually charge a fixed interest rate based on the days that you choose as well. And we charge it up front. So that interest rate is like a flat fee and it goes directly back to the floor. So everything in the system is designed for the BLV to like constantly be increasing. So each person is like, each person is taking a slight loss, but the slight loss gets socialized across everybody. And that's how the system grows. So in terms of lending, Yeah, it's fixed rate, fixed interest. One interesting property actually is that each time that you loop and you borrow, you're actually getting leverage on the BLV increases. So say you have like 4x exposure through your loops, you actually get 4x. Every time the BLV increases, you get 4 times the BLV increase given to you, actually. Another interesting property that I should have said earlier was that say that you take a borrow and you borrow for like a whole year. Say you borrowed at like $1, right? So the BLV was $1. At the end of the year, the BLV increased to $2. That extra dollar is available for you to take. You just pay the fixed interest again on that $1, on that new $1, and that and you have it available to you. So it's fully liquid to you. The design of
one of the coolest things about this credit facility is that like a lot of people will see on the front end that they can, whenever the floor increases, they can actually borrow ETH with no additional collateral. And a lot of people thought it was bug. They were like, wait, I'm not putting any more money in the system.
Because the floor is increasing, and because the floor is increasing, you're allowed to take out more of a loan. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I think this is freaking people out a bit because everyone's so used to, you know, pooled lending prices. Like, ah, no, I'm going to get liquidated. I got to check the price. But no, you just got to check the time here.
Yeah, that's right. As long as you pay back your loan, like before your expiration, you're good.
Is it possible to take, like, let's say the BLV increases and you can take that out. Is it possible to take that to pay back like the loan if you want?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's the best part actually. So it's designed such that like if you were to loop and like say you took like 4 loans and then the BLV passes the price that you took these loans at, like the market price, those loans are effectively free, paid for, and like you're just like purely in profit at this point. You can keep your loans and keep eating off the new BLV increases, actually.
And you don't have to do anything, right? It's just like
no.
It takes your collateral. It burns. It's an accounting trick. And then
you literally have to do nothing. You just got to claim the new BLV increases whenever you decide to.
But you can repay your borrow out of the money that you're taking from the floor increase. Yeah. So the nice thing is what we try to do is we try to give people more optionality about their exposures and how they want to configure it. So rather than just creating one single spot market where like everyone is paying back and just like thinking about trading on this one price, the price itself doesn't move as much, but you can get leveraged exposure through the borrows. And so if you wanted to be, you know, highly levered and get a lot more returns on the price action, you can do it not by like waiting for the price to go up 1,000%, but by looping, you know, 100 times and getting that kind of exposure from that. Yeah. But it doesn't force everybody to come along for the ride. You know, like the asset itself is still relatively stable. But then, you can ramp up or down based on, you know, how you want to utilize a credit facility.
And go ahead.
There's actually one interesting thing about the lending is that the way the lending works is that it actually locks up the circulating supply. So there's actually less supply to be sold into the market. So like I've been looking at it kind of like an effective. Yeah, it's collateralized, right? So it's actually kind of like an effective floor where you know we have the BLV, which is like the literal like smart contract enforced floor, but then you know at this current state there is actually like this effective floor that's higher than the BLV, where like you know as long as you know if the borrows and like no one's repaying their loans, then the floor is actually at this point, right? That's pretty interesting.
And then like there's no sell pressure because you just burn the tokens.
And no one has tokens to start to sell. You have to buy the tokens.
You have to buy.
There's
no sellers.
There's a, There's another interesting thing, actually. Because there's no liquidations in the system and they're just defaults, there's no liquidation cascades, actually. So, like, so the way that, like, if you see the so if you look at the price chart, it's like there are places where, like, repays happen and, like, there's series of repays and many people repay, but it actually is, like, fairly limited and it's not, like, huge. Whereas, like, in normal price charts, like, you'll see, like, if there's a lot of leverage in the system, you'll see that, like, massive liquidation cascades will, like, crash the price. This is, and this is what happened, like, so many, like, 2021 coins, like, you know, namely, my favorite is Olympus. Like, that was, like, one of the hugest things was, like, there's so much.
Oh, that, that cascade was insane.
It was insane. It was, like, Wonderland. It was fucking and, like, it was all, like, all this leverage that was getting liquidated all, like, you know, very short amount of time. Like, this is not possible in our system, which is kind of cool.
And what – I was going to ask, what kind of strategies are you seeing people utilize from this credit facility? I mean, obviously there's looping, but are there other ones that people are using?
Yeah. The one that we really like is – to collateralize and borrow and then single-sided LP. And so the idea is you can borrow and then you you create a liquidity position that buffers the anchor. So between the floor and the market, because you know that, like, if there's any unwinding or trading going on, that's probably where it's going to be. And now you're kind of covered on both ends. If the price goes up, your borrow amount stays the same because you borrow the floor, but you're getting, you know, the collateral exposure on the way up. And if it goes down, then you're actually just buying back these tokens at, like, closer and closer to floor value, which is closer and closer to, like, the risk-free rate of the system. And you're also making LP fees. So there's a bunch of, like, strategies,
So am I single-siding, like, is the range, like, the ETH. Whole anchor is ETH?
Yes.
So it's ETH, it's in the whole anchor, or is it in half the anchor, like...
Yeah, I think that that's up to each individual. Like, if you think about the game theory of this, one thing that I find to be really cool is that you never really reach floor because... well, in theory, you never really reach floor because at floor, everyone wants to buy it. Because if you buy it, you're just adding liquidity, but you don't have any downside. There's no taxes, so you don't pay anything up front. And then, it can only really go up from there. So, like,
your borrow LTVs are also like at 100%
at 100
when you're at floor. Yeah,
so it's fully capital efficient. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So you can choose the risk-free strategy. I get it's not like risk-free, but the most conservative strategy would probably be something like collateralize your YES, borrow ETH, put the ETH at whatever the floor price is to whatever the current market price is. If it goes up, you're making money from the price appreciation of the token. If it goes down, you're making money from LP fees. And if it hits a certain range, let's say like 10% above premium or where you believe it's bottom, you can take out your LP. Which should mostly be in YES that you've bought back, and only a little bit in ETH left, and then you can collateralize that and do it again.
What's another one is like to just borrow, and then you can use the ETH anywhere else in the ecosystem if you want, right?
Oh, so, true. And another thing, are there any more strategies?
Yeah, if you're a Chad, you just loop.
Just loop. That flywheel spinning. We love that here.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to ask, like, are there any risks to the system? Like, what criticisms have you guys received, and how have you responded to those criticisms?
I can start with this. Are there risks to the system? I would say, like, obviously the most prominent risk in my mind is smart contract risk. This has been audited before. Baseline's audited by probably the best auditors for this type of system, Trust Security. It was Jaywon, the guy who wrote the Uniswap development book, V3 development book, and 100 Proof, who was the first one to point out like the KyberSwap exploit using like the tick crossing like manipulation stuff. So it's been audited, but the main risk I think is still smart contract risk. And then also the other criticism that we've gotten a lot is like the liquidity configuration, which is that it's too deep. And so because of that, right now, price action isn't as springy. It's not sensitive. There's a lot of ETH in the discovery to buy through before the shift happens. There's specific like reasons why we've done it like this. So the way that we designed liquidity in YES is because it's the first of its kind, and because we expected, you know, we thought there's a chance that there could be a lot of people that bid this. We want to make sure. So your risk in the system is the premium. It's the difference between the market and the floor. If you buy it at the market price, it can still go to the floor because that's, you know, where the system has calculated it's able to buy everything back. So, yeah, there is risk there. And we wanted to limit that risk for everyone who's buying the token because we didn't want people to. It's not known. So people don't really know how to price it or to understand risk. And so we just ended up creating a very thick discovery. The thickness of the liquidity is actually a really interesting idea. The idea behind it is that you don't want a certain premium to emerge before the floor moves up. So in our case, you know, it doesn't take like the premium can be lower before the floor bumps up. In a more sensitive like configuration, you might have 200, 300, 400% premiums against the floor. You know, the floor price could be $1, the market price could be $5, and you know, because liquidity is so thin, it's not really rising the same way. So those are the two main risks and criticisms. One obviously is the exploit risk, which everyone should be aware of, even if we're audited and getting more audits. The second one is the like liquidity depth and how it translates to like market risk in the form of premiums.
Got yeah. it. I feel but, like you got, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say like, there's always risks, right? Like as fully alluded to is like the premiums are like always a risk. But I would also say that like a lot of the design of the system is to de-risk markets. So like I would say that like risks here, like minus smart contract risk, because that's always the problem. I think like there's a lot of things that we did to actually reduce risk, such that like there's no team allocation outside to like dump on you. So like there's much less price risk. There's a floor to protect you on the downside. The loops are like the lending is like non-liquidatable. So like a lot of these things are like fairly safe, like philosophically as like market structures. But yeah, there's always risks, right? Like it's just a market. Mm.
No, you guys have created quite the elegant system. Basically with, you know, I'm going to try to rehash the docs again. So from reading your docs, basically with the BLV, your capacity is always more than the floating supply. You can always buy up, you know, all the tokens that are in circulation. Then with the liquidity, you have, you know, the floor, which is like the floor, it's thick. Then you have anchor, which is kind of like where the price floats. And then if it like punctures up into the atmosphere, then you have discovery, where I like to think, you know, new tokens are minted and where rebalances happen. And then when the rebalancing happens, you have shift and slide. And can you correct me? Is shift when the price decreases or increases?
Increases. You can think of like you slide down, right? You don't slide
down. Okay, you slide down. Yeah. Okay, slide down. So you slide down. So slide decreases. Yeah. Shift increases price. You increases, shift up. Yeah. You slide down. Shift up. Yeah. Slide down. Okay.
Shift up. Slide down. Yeah.
It's quite simple, but also like brilliant. It's like, it's whenever we discover these new DeFi primitives, it's like, how has no one thought of this before? And you guys kind of came from this first principles framework of, okay, tokenomics is broken with founders. How can we build it from the ground up? Okay. And then we have this whole lore with like White Lotus and Jimbo, Jimbo, and now Baseline. And then YES is your first use case, which is more like a stable coin than it is a meme token.
Yeah.
And then
because we try to take the risk out, it became more like a stable coin. Yeah.
It became like which you wanted. Basically, when people like criticize, like, oh, like, you know, we can't, the price discovery is too hard. It's like, no, you guys are just being conservative. Which, yeah. You know, which, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I want to say something about this because it is a big thing in mind for a lot of people is like the discovery doesn't have to be this thick. It can be thinner. So yeah, I don't want people to think that like, oh, I can't launch my token on Baseline because there's no way that it can moon. That's not true. It can moon. You just have to ascribe more risk to the system. And maybe more risk is better. Like maybe that's what we should be doing for certain types of assets. But different assets have different liquidity profiles based on like their utility. For us with YES, we kind of really want to get into Blast. And the utility is primarily like a liquidity asset. So we want to be having minimal slippages for, you know, these like smaller sizes because of what we're trying to do with that project. Yeah.
And so this leads to my next question. What's next on the roadmap? It seems the next logical thing is a launch pad for tokens pairing with YES. Is that correct? Is there other things you have on the roadmap? What are you guys thinking?
I think that's like, as far as like what we're willing to reveal, I think like, yes. Yeah. So we're going to like keep using we keep using YES as like a liquidity token, and we're going to build our launch pad based around that. But, there's a lot in the bag, but like, I just, I don't know. Are you comfortable saying it?
Yeah. I'm comfortable like leaking some alpha. It's the, So we kind of are we built a simulation engine when we were testing this with different like market participants and risk profiles, and like we ran 30,000 transactions against that pool just to see what would happen. But we never saw any prod data about this, so we don't know what people are going to do in real life. And so one of the things that we wanted to avoid was just starting with the launch pad immediately, because everyone's going to have their own pool. Everyone's going to want to fork it. And then everyone's going to realize that there's the same problem. So what we wanted to do is kind of put this out there as almost a separate project, not really, but it's branded differently. And then now that we've had time to observe, we know better what are the things that people really care about in terms of like liquidity customization. And we can use that to, inform the designs of the launch pad. We actually have the launch pad kind of like already built. Baseline was like, has this built in mind, but we just didn't want anyone to use it until we were more confident and like knowledgeable about what it is that we built. Yeah. So that's coming. But I will say this, we're not going to force people to use YES as the pair. So if anyone is interested in using Baseline, but they're not interested in YES, that's okay. The liquidity system is like a liquidity system in itself. It stands in its own right. It doesn't have to do with Blast or with YES, but there will be incentives to pair against YES in this launch pad because we do want to build out YES. Yeah. So I think that's about as much as you want to say. So the incentives will just be like built into the like launch pad. Like, so we're not entirely like, we haven't locked this one in yet, but we're leaning towards this direction, which is that deploying YES pairs will just be cheaper or like less fees than deploying in like USDB or WEATH pairs.
Got it.
That's the main.
Okay. There we go. And I guess what are the, with the different types of tokenomics designs that you can come up with Baseline, like YES is just one. What are some other ones? I guess you can go more conservative if you like want to be like a stable coin, or you want to be like a super mean coin. You'd be like the most degen. If you want to be like, something in between, go ahead.
Yeah. We spoke about this too. Indigo will probably want to talk about this as well, but like it's very relevant for Frax, because if you want to do like a stable coin, for example, one of the Frax's like biggest things in my mind are the AMOs and AMOs, the fact that you can like mint tokens into the pool when there's like, higher prices to bring it back down. That's actually happening automatically in Baseline. So if you configure the liquidity really, really thick and you kind of narrow the price range to stable coin price ranges, then anytime someone's bidding in Baseline and there's a shift and you can shift and place the liquidity back to a dollar, you actually have Frax AMOs in a baseline pool. Because anytime someone is increasing the supply, they're swapping, you know,
minting tokens.
You're minting tokens into a slightly higher range. And you're using the surplus liquidity from that to kind of like boost the liquidity profile of the system. And, you know, it makes money for everybody. So, if you want to do a stable coin, you can do it. If you want to make a kind of like, I guess, governance token or utility token that where people care less about the inherent value and more about the speculative property of it, then you could make the discovery thinner. That'd probably be better for things that like governance tokens that require votes, or, you know, things where you want, you don't care as much about the price floor. You care more about like what the future could be. Yeah.
And are these ranges customizable after they're released? So like for example, let's say you want to make Yes like a degen coin. Like, could you just like make the discovery really thin if you wanted to?
Yes.
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 Okay. I think a lot of people have said that, right? Like, oh, why don't you just make it thinner? Your LTVs of your loans go down significantly though, right?
Oh, okay.
So like, if you do have like your premium is like 100%, your LTV is only 50%, right? Lower. So it's just trade-offs. Like the whole system is just trade-offs, but it's just like a set of tools, and like you can parameterize it how you want and like make it work how you want.
There should be projects with thinner discovery and better price action that are coming out pairing against Yes soon. So we'll see
soon. Yes.
So
yes.
We'll see how different liquidity parameters will look like. Yeah. We just again want to emphasize the first one. We saw like 300 million volume in 2 days in the pool, and then the craziest thing about this is, you know, we didn't have any initial supply, so that's all organic volume, and that's all volume that ends up going back into the floor. So none of that's wash traded; it's legitimate. And so we wanted to make sure that, like, you know, for people that are trying this system, that we're not like overexposing them to risk because we misconfigured the liquidity. So that's why we like erred more on the conservative side. And now that we have these properties, there's a lot of very useful things that we can do with them. Namely, for Yes, we can make it a liquidity asset against ETH. Yeah.
Got it. And you guys are on Blast right now. What is your experience building on Blast? I believe you guys won the Big Bang competition, so congrats. And do you plan on launching on other chains like Fractal or Arbitrum or other ones?
Yeah, we won the competition. Blast has been interesting. Like one of the coolest things.
It's been interesting.
One of the coolest things was that the timing was like perfect, right? Like as far as the market and everything, that was really cool. Another thing is like these incentives that we're given actually helps us a lot. And like we're gonna be releasing our points program like this week, I hope. Probably on our community call. And that's a really awesome thing about Blast. Also like the community has been like really supportive. Like people are saying like we're the most interesting thing on Blast, which is really cool. So we have like a lot of mind share and things like that.
Yeah,
so
I think it's incredibly powerful for you, for Blast, that you guys launched on them, like this novel DeFi tokenomics primitive. Like that's huge for Blast. There's too many copycat chains with copycat projects and, you know, copycat forks. Like the fact that Blast like came out with Baseline, you know, huge ups to them. So credit where credit's due. Go ahead.
Shout out to the Blast team. They've been really helpful and proactive about like supporting us. That's been really nice. We spoke with some other like ecosystems, but we didn't get the same level of support. So we're very thankful to Blast actually for being there for us. The other thing that's really nice about Blast is the native yield. Because we end up having so much ETH in the system, we're just sitting on that ETH as yield. And there's a lot more, Blast basically gives us a lot of firepower to supplement the system in ways that we normally wouldn't be able to on like mainnet or on another chain, mm-hmm. because it has mm-hmm. native yield, it has Blast Gold and all this like airdrop stuff that's happening. So that's been very helpful because it's super hard to get things right the first time. So anything that we feel like, we can kind of like the Blast's properties help us cover some of those issues. To your point about the other chains, Baseline is an agnostic system, right? The whole point of Baseline is to solve like crypto assets, as these like scammy, non-investable things that you buy for, you know, a couple days and then you sell to make money. If we want, like one of the things that Indigo and I both care about very deeply is changing crypto assets as like, and the risk profile from being these things that are these wacky risk assets to, you know, actual savings instruments. And how do we actually get there? So it's not just going to be for Blast assets. We want this to be for everything. So obviously, like, you know, we eventually probably will be going to other chains, potentially. Those are like more long-term plans. I think for now, the thing internally is like, there's a lot of things we can do, but because we have this asset launched, yes, before we go into these big, you know, more grand plans about, you know, conquering all the chains, we should just focus on making this thing that we've launched good and returning, you know, as much value as we can to the people who've already committed capital to it. I think that's the responsible thing to do. There are a lot of projects that just want to hop around to collect, you know, incentives in the chains, but we don't have that approach. Our approach is to, you know, be very like mutually beneficial to everyone that we work with because they know that we're committed like long-term value drivers. That's, I think, another like differentiator for our protocol is that we stuck around and we tried to, you know, build something valuable over a longer period of time. And so we want to stick to that. But the system itself is meant for all crypto assets. It's mm-hmm. designed to give people better understanding of like what they're investing in. That can't just be limited to Blast. But for now, for all YES holders and people who have like already participated, we're obligated to try to get as much value as we can into this mm-hmm. asset first. And I think we want to be focusing on that. That's the responsible thing to do.
Yeah. And one last question. What is the grand vision for Baseline? Where in the ideal world, where do you see Baseline in 2 years, 4 years out?
For myself, like one of the most interesting things is just like there's this idea of like incentive alignment, right? And so I think that like, and I fully alluded to this just a minute ago, was like crypto assets are like really badly incentive aligned. There's like no laws really that like anyone is really following. It's just purely incentives driven. So like a lot of the incentives actually push people to do things that are like, you know, a team or a set of investors might do something that is like the opposite of the holders. And you create this like very adversarial environment. And one of the best things about Baseline is like, we don't have like, it's not nearly as bad, right? Like the team does not have any tokens. We all have this floor that we're all contributing to with every action that we're using. All the flows go, we all get a portion of it. And it's all programmatic. Everything is immutable. Like there's like significantly less risk in this thing. And I think that one of the reasons why we went with YES is like, okay, it's so radically different that like, we just need like a meme, like a really powerful meme to show people rather than tell them, because no one's going to listen anyway. So let's just show them what it can do.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes.
The hardest part about explaining the system to people was not like how it works, but getting people to believe that it can exist. Like people are like, what do you mean?
It is possible.
Everyone told us it was impossible. Literally everyone would be like, this is not possible. Like this is a scam or something. It's like, it's just ridiculous.
It's funny. You still see people on Twitter today. They're like, there's no way they can buy back the entire circulating supply. That's like ridiculous. That's like $88 million worth of assets that they have to buy back. And for me personally, the incentive alignment, I totally agree with. It bakes more into this in a more tangible, like, I guess this might sound kind of grandiose, but like every asset in the world should have a floor. And it should have maybe not a, necessarily a floor in the way that we see the floor today. But what the floor, I see what it does is it gives market participants more transparency about the properties of the asset, as in like how much liquidity is in the system and like how much is budgeted or provisioned to, you know, support the premium versus, you know, is kind of like saved. That is really important because a lot of my friends, they don't know what is going on. They just look at price. Or, you know, crypto traders, I know, look at price, they look at market cap, FDV. What we want to do is we want to add more information into markets so that when you're buying something, you know exactly what's happening underneath the market structure. And yeah, like bringing that to public nomenclature. Right now, it's mostly just market makers. And a lot of what I think they do, this is just my personal opinion fully, is like, they, you know, take a lot of the initial supply because it's all pre-minted, and then they give these terms to founders with call options, and then but they get to price it. So your counterparties and liquidity providers are the ones as a founder that are actually like controlling your market. And so what we want to do is we want to have, you know, this asset type becoming the main asset type, and everyone using it, and you know, people having more information about what they're trading. That would be ideal for us. Yeah. And then once that becomes a thing, people like becoming more used to it, realizing that this type of asset class is just fundamentally a better asset class than, you know, these like randomly issued liquid, but like floating tokens that are just all over, you know, people's wallets and just ready to get dumped whenever.
Well put, well put. I love what you guys are doing. You know, I'm rooting for you. I'm yes all the way. You know, Indigo, you know, we're into the same music. So when I first heard bass, I'm like, oh, when you hear that bass line,
yes,
tone. So like, yes, literally, that's the thing that's been like going in my head where I've been like looping. I'm like, when you hear that bass line, it's like when you hear that loop. Yeah, guys, thanks so much for coming on. I guess usually I do like a lightning round with Kit, but I don't have Kit here. I'll just like ask, well, you know, one question, I ask like one or two questions for each of you, like lighthearted, like, you know, nothing to do with DeFi or anything. What music or artists or song you have on repeat right now? Indigo, you go first.
Oh, of course you asked me. It's because it's the same thing on your playlist, huh?
Yeah.
Favorite artists, as you know, you and I share favorite artists like G Jones, EEPROM, a lot of like bass heavy music.
Hell yeah.
I've been listening to a lot of like drum and bass and jungle a lot. So actually our off topic is just like going off with like people recommending like really, really good music. I'm like, whoa, like we just happened to get all these people in. So that's really cool.
Are you going to ECC in Belgium?
No, I haven't any, no plans yet, but I mean, maybe.
They have Rampage Festival like right before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's all
on the same days.
Yeah. No. It's like 5, 6, 7. Is like the festival, and then it's like 8 to the 11th is ECC.
Oh, so, man, your brain's gonna be fried.
Yeah, all right, we'll talk to the Web3 Wubs group about that.
Yes,
anyways, fully allocated. You know, what do you listen to?
I really enjoy this artist called After the Party, all one word. Mm-hmm. I think this guy, he's like an indie producer in upstate New York, and like the production is like phenomenal. It's like kind of like R&B trap, like hip hop, but not really. It just feels very alternative. I've never heard anything that's like it. He just came out with a new song called Bones, that I've been listening to a lot. It's pretty sick. Yeah.
Sick. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking one more question. What is one book or one topic outside of crypto that you're reading? If you guys are reading a book, Indigo or Foley, are you guys like reading anything? Like outside of crypto?
Yeah. I try to not like think about crypto as much as I can because I'm just so
that's so hard.
Yeah. There's one book I'm listening to, it's called Chip War. It's about semiconductors. Really, really good book. And it's free on Spotify Premium, by the way. So for anyone, if they want to listen, it's really, really good. It's about like semiconductors, their history, and like the significance of like, especially now in the modern times, and it's just getting more significant as time goes on. And then actually, funny enough, I just went to a bookstore yesterday, and I like ran into like the philosophy section, and I just got a bunch of books on like Wittgenstein and Nietzsche. And right now I'm reading Republic by Plato. So I thought like, okay, all this time I've always wanted to read about philosophy. I guess it's a good time.
Now's the time. Now's the time.
Yeah.
Oh, we got a scholar here. Foley, what about you?
Yeah, I'm not as much of a bookworm as Indigo, I'm not reading anything now, but I will shout out one of my favorite books. It's Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman, by Richard Feynman. It's like just an autobiography of his life and the things that he's like done. I know it's not supposed to be about baseline, but one of the coolest things about this that really inspired me is, so Feynman is this Nobel Prize winning physicist, really renowned, super smart guy, a lot of respect. In the book, he talks a lot about like thinking from first principles. And it's very clear that he has this like distaste for like fake academics, you know, people who like talk a lot about these complex concepts, but they don't actually grasp the fundamentals. And it like, I thought about it a lot, actually, when I was building Baseline, is like, we have a lot of people who think a lot about these complex systems. But when it comes down to it, as long as you solve the core issues and, you know, you approach things from first principles, you can build very like novel and interesting things without a lot of, like fancy. You don't need the fancy stuff to trick people into thinking that you're smart. You can just build
just
useful things and let people realize over
time. Just
got to
do it. Yes.
Just got to do it. Yes. Just got to. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
All right, guys. Where can people find Baseline? Where can people use Baseline? Where can people, you know, follow Baseline? Yes, on socials. Where can they follow you on your socials?
Yeah, we're on Twitter, Baseline Markets, and then also we just got our Twitter back a few days ago for Yes. So it's Yes Money 420. That's where we post a lot of memes. It's like much more fun, but I like that account better personally. our website is baseline.markets, and our Discord is discord.gg/baseline, and you can find us on Twitter as well. I'm Indigo. I'm a blue mushroom, and it's like _NDIGO, and then Fully as well. Go ahead.
Yeah. Fully allocated on Twitter. It's a picture of Aang from Avatar. Shout out to one of the best TV shows ever created. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Yes. All right,
yes,
guys.
Yes.
And I'm going to sign us out here. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm DeFiDave22. You can follow Flywheel on Twitter at FlywheelDeFi. Go ahead to our YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe. You give us a like, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. Make sure to follow us on our other socials, Farcaster at Flywheel, TikTok at FlywheelDeFi, Telegram. Join our group at Flywheel DeFi. Subscribe to our website, flywheeldefi.com. We're going to do a whole write-up of this. We're going to have more DeFi Alpha coming soon. And that's it. It's Baseline, everyone. Yes, thank you for watching. Go follow Baseline. Yes. Go see what they're up to. Yes, yes, yes. Indigo, yes. Fully allocated. We'll see you guys soon. See you guys.
Thank you so much for having us, Dave. This is great.
No problem.
Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.